Now we are going to start a new topic today. So far we were discussing several suttas, and last time actually we have finished what you call this Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, which was talking about the non-self characteristic. And today actually, as a request by one of the participants, so we are going to start this rhinoceros horn, Khagga Visana Sutta. So this is available in the Sutta Nipata, one of the very beautiful book available in the Khuddaka Nikaya. And again, it is well respected and well recognized that it contains the early teachings of the Buddha, if you consider the Sutta Nipata. And it is well recognized. This is one of the oldest books in the Theravada tradition, and it is said that they are the original teachings of the Buddha, and again, well respected book in the Sutta Nipata. It's the Sutta Nipata. So there are, this sutta comes in the first section, and it is mentioned that all these verses available in this sutta are uttered by a Paccheka Buddha. So basically, our Buddha, the Gautama, the Sammasambuddha, so he is actually explaining each and every verse available in this sutta, mentioning that each and every of these verses are uttered by a Paccheka Buddha. You know that there are three levels of enlightenment or three levels of attainment according to the Dhamma. The very, the best one, the utmost one is the Sammasambuddha, where he becomes self-enlightened and is able to teach the others. So that is how the Gautama Sammasambuddha. And then there are Paccheka Buddhas. So they actually are able to become self-enlightened, but they are unable to teach others. So that is the typical explanation given. So these Paccheka Buddhas are able to become self-enlightened, but they are not able to describe the Dhamma in detail like Sammasambuddha is doing. And the other part is called Savaka Buddha. By hearing Dhamma from a Sammasambuddha, there are disciples of the Sammasambuddha, Travakas, disciples, and they are able to also follow the path, and with the teaching of the Buddha, Sammasambuddha, they are able to attain enlightenment, and some of them are able to describe the Dhamma, and some are not, and some are to some extent. So likewise, there are variations among the disciples. So these are the three levels that the Dhamma explains: Sammasambuddha, Paccheka Buddha, and the Savaka Buddha. Now, this rhinoceros horn is particularly describing in a way the seclusion that a monk or a nun is enjoying. And basically here, what Paccheka Buddha is in a way enjoying. So how his life is going on. And each and every verse in this sutta have a kind of a story behind it. So actually this whole sutta going on as many verses, actually around 40 verses are there. And if we consider the first verse, there's a very beautiful story behind that, and it is explained in the commentary. Now, at one occasion, Venerable Ananda actually asked this question from the Buddha, and can you explain to me about the Paccheka Buddhas? So then actually Buddha gives this explains this Khagga Visana Sutta, explaining different verses and how these various Paccheka Buddhas attain their attainment, or how they become Paccheka Buddhas, and what is their sort of udana, what is their explanation about how they attain the Paccheka Buddha. Now, if we consider this first verse, Sabbesu Bhutesu Nidhaya Dandam Avihetayam Anyatarampitesam Na Putta Michaya Kuto sahayam eko chare kagga visana kappu. This eko chare kagga visana kappu, so this is a recurring phrase available in all the verses. And eko chare kagga visana kappu. So he lives like a rhinoceros horn alone. So he is basically living alone like a very powerful, very strong rhinoceros horn. So rhinoceros, you may all know, and they are having a horn. It's a single horn. And that is very powerful, very strong, and quite steady. So that steadiness, and again that stability of the mind, and again the strength, and again the seclusion. So all are represented in this rhinoceros horn. So therefore it is mentioned, whoever the practitioner, so particularly here the Paccheka Buddha, he's living like a rhinoceros horn. So now, in order to go to the story, so actually I will come to the verse when we are discussing the after the story. So this is a kind of a small story behind this particular verse. So there is one time, one venerable monk ordained under the Blessed One Kassapa. So you know, before our Buddha, the Gautama Buddha, there was a previous Buddha. He's called Kassapa. Kassapa Buddha. So one monk actually ordained under Kassapa Buddha. And this monk is fulfilling an ascetic practice that is called Gacha Pattagata Vata. Gacha Pachagata Vata. So this is a kind of a practice particularly relevant to mindfulness. So what it explains is that how to be mindful on daily activities in a way. How one can be mindful in daily activities. So this is the one highlighted in this Gacha Pachagata Vata. So what it means, actually there are four ways it is explained. In a way we can say as four levels. And one level is at all not the correct level. At all not the, he does not practice it at all. The other three levels actually to some extent he is practicing. So let me explain one by one. So when consider a big one's, say monk's life, so he, suppose he is getting up early and then do some various duties and then and attend to various other activities, and then suppose he is going to Pindapata, alms round. So that is why it is mentioned who takes it. So actually this whole time he was doing this all duties, his course mindfully. Suppose he is sweeping the floor, sweeping the garden, he is preparing his bed. Suppose he is practicing mindfulness, or he does his daily practice. And all these things he is doing mindfully. So he was able to establish mindfulness while on these various activities. Now he is going on Pindapata. And once he is being on to Pindapata, after receiving Pindapata, now he has to engage with various other activities of the village. So he is maybe a kind of a senior monk or whoever known to the village people, villagers. And they ask various questions and this monk has to answer. And sometimes there are certain things to settle. And there are such duties among the villagers. So this monk has to engage in those activities. So ultimately what happens is he forgets to maintain that mindfulness. So when he is returning back to the monastery, he is not bringing that mindfulness. So that is why it is mentioned, the bhikkhu who takes it but does not bring it back. So this monk actually, when he is going to the village, actually he was mindful. He was with his kammatthana and he was doing it well. But unfortunately, he lost it in between and therefore he is not returning mindfully. Now if he comes to the lay life, so this is also common. Suppose you are waking up early and you go to have a wash and you do some mindful brushing, mindful washing, and all these activities you do mindfully. Suppose you even take your breakfast mindfully. And suppose now you are going to work and it may be a kind of a busy time. It may be a busy road or maybe a public vehicle. So slowly you lose your mindfulness. And ultimately, suppose during the office also you couldn't maintain it. So once you are coming back home, you are utterly unmindful. You are not bringing what you are taking at home when you are leaving your home. So you are able to maintain mindfulness, but unfortunately, coming back, so you are not taking it back. So this is the situation explained in the first level. And there are other situations, one who brings it back, but does not take it. So what it means is that there are certain, actually it is related to the monk's life. So there are certain monks who actually take less food, maybe one meal at a time, one meal per day. And therefore they have some stomach aches, gastritis and all these different difficulties. So therefore in the morning, it's very difficult for them to maintain mindfulness. So their mind becomes scattered and due to that weak body, so they are not in a good position to maintain mindfulness. So therefore they can't maintain such mindfulness and so they may do various calls in a sort of rush and therefore they can't maintain it. And so now they are going on alms round. But there are, it is mentioned in the traditional villages, so before they start alms round, so there is a porridge offered to the monks. So this is called asana sala. We are kind of a seating place where the porridge is offered to monks. And now this particular monk who was in a very burning hunger and he received this porridge and he is now having it. So after having porridge, now he is fairly recovered. Now he is able to establish mindfulness. Now he is going on arms round very mindfully and receive food mindfully and coming back mindfully. Now he is the one who actually when he is leaving the monastery, he didn't have mindfulness at the morning, suppose he didn't have mindfulness, but on the way back, he was able to establish mindfulness and he is returning with mindfulness. So the very beautiful scenario. And there may be certain situations like that. Say you are spending a lay life and you have to look after your children, your husband, your wife and various daily activities. So therefore, while suppose in the early morning, people are very busy, very difficult to establish mindfulness. Suppose in a rush, you prepare everything and now you rush to the work. Suppose you are driving yourself alone. Probably you can be mindful. Once you get onto your vehicle, probably you can be mindful. On the other hand, suppose you are in a public vehicle, a train or bus. There also, if you can calm down yourself, let go of all the past incidents, close your eyes, probably now you can establish mindfulness. That is also possible. And suppose you are able to maintain mindfulness during the office work as well and on the way back also, assume that you are able to bring back mindfulness. So that is another scenario. And one who neither takes it nor brings it back. So this is the very heedless monk where he does not practice at all while being in the monastery and he is now going on village Pindapatha. Even during the Pindapatha, he is not mindful. And on the way back also, he is not mindful. He is not a practitioner at all. So this is the weakest scenario. And this can happen to lay people as well. So they are quite busy with various activities and look after many things, many responsibilities, this and that. So as a result, so he is unable to maintain mindfulness. And on the office, during the office and traveling also, he is unable to maintain mindfulness. And on the way back also, he is not mindful. And the best scenario is one who both take it and brings it back. So this is the best scenario. Just after waking up, he is able to establish mindfulness. Now, suppose he is going to the washroom, able to establish mindfulness. as he keeps his arms or hands under the water, so he is mindful, and brushing the teeth, he is mindful, wiping his face, using a towel, he is mindful. So likewise, each and every little scenarios, incidents, so he is able to establish mindfulness, maintain mindfulness, and even while traveling, he is able to maintain mindfulness. And assume that in case of a monk, assume during the alms round also he is able to maintain mindfulness, and on the way back also able to maintain mindfulness. In a layperson also, his life also, if he is a say, best practitioner, so this is the kind of best scenario that we can think of where he is trying to maintain unbroken kind of mindfulness. So it's a kind of a progressive event. So one may start with having lack of mindfulness, and then slowly he is moving forward and slowly finding out various possibilities of improving his mindfulness and enhancing it, spreading it to various activities, and now he is able to have complete mindfulness throughout the day. So this is the best scenario. Now this person, so this monk, actually practiced like that for a long time during the Buddha Kassapa. And then he passed away. And after that, so he is reborn to a king. And later, he also became the king. Now, this king is called Brahmadatta. So, this is a very common name. Comes in the Jataka stories as well as in these various commentary stories. So, this king Brahmadatta is the previous monk who actually has practiced this Gata Paccha Gata Vata. So now, so he is actually a very righteous king. So he decided not to go into any wars or get into any fights or any of these. So he has become, in a way, very righteous king. But unfortunately, that some people have misused it. So at the beginning, he actually inherited, it is said in the commentary, about 20,000 kingdoms. And he is the greater king, the kind of a monarch. And unfortunately, certain ministers actually tried to misuse his righteous living. And they started to work for certain other kings. And those other kings started to invade certain kingdoms of this King Brahmadatta. Now slowly they are invading these various kingdoms and coming closer to this King Brahmadatta's kingdom. Now, he actually had several thousands of kingdoms. Now each one after the other now falling to the other king, one another rival king. And one minister is actually supporting this rival king. Now they are coming closer, even to invade King Brahmadatta's kingdom. So at this time, actually, there were some friendly and loyal ministers. And they say, mighty king, why don't you go for the battle and we can easily win these people. So likewise, they try to convince, but this king doesn't like to do it. But ultimately, those armies and those marshals, they were able to convince the king that they are simply going to catch the rival king without killing any person. They are going to catch those rivalry army. So then the King Brahmadatta agreed, and so tactfully King Brahmadatta's army was able to capture the rival king and the rivalry army. And at this time, King Brahmadatta saw that everyone was captured. At this time, the rivalry king understood that this king, King Brahmadatta, is a very righteous king. He's a very good king. He doesn't want to kill anyone. He doesn't want to shed even a single drop of blood. So he understood the good qualities of this king. So he came and asked for forgiveness. He want to apologize, and he asked for forgiveness. And then King Brahmadatta forgiven, and there he mentioned like this. because of one person's this kind of protected mind, so this great mass of people has not shed a drop of blood, even a small enough for a tiny fly to lick. How wonderful, how excellent. May all beings be happy, without enmity, free from affliction. So he is actually quite happy that he was able to win the battle, and the rivalry king also come and apologize, and now they too actually have become friends, and therefore he was quite happy, and he was actually practicing mindfulness on loving kindness, so loving kindness meditation. So this whole thing incident actually was amazing incident happened to this king, and so therefore he is quite happy, quite extremely happy, and so he used this very loving kindness as a kammatthana, as a meditation practice, and so he was able to develop it to the level of jhana, and then using that as a base, as a foundation, he was able to develop vipassana. And then he realized the enlightenment. He became an enlightened Paccheka Buddha. So this is how actually he basically has practiced. So keeping loving kindness, using loving kindness as a mechanism, as a way to improve concentration. And once that concentration is available, established, he has practiced vipassana. And then he attained Paccheka Buddha, state of Paccheka Buddha. Now, so there are, now we can go to the verse, Sabbesu Bhutesu Nidaya Danda. Now, this Paccheka Buddha is telling, now having put down the rod towards all beings, now he is talking about his way of life. Even though he is a mighty king, he hasn't used the weapons, he hasn't used the various armies. So he has given up all those weapons. Avihetayang anyatarampi tesam. And not harming any person, even a single person, he is not harming. Na putta michaya kuto sahayam. And now he has become the Paccheka Buddha. Now he is not desiring even a son. And how about the desiring of then the friends and all the other companions? So now he has completely become the Paccheka Buddha. So he is not now fond of having children or loving them or fondling them or any of those. So even if he is not like to have that kind of amenability with his own children, how about them having the other companions? Of course, nothing to worry them. So he basically has given up everything. Eko chare kagga visana kappu. Now he is living like a rhinoceros horn. So here, actually, we can go a little bit further. So basically, the commentary explains that typically our mind is occupied with craving. So therefore, craving is the one what we are accompanying. So all this samsara, we are living with craving. So we are keeping our hands together with craving. Sometimes we may think that my partner is so and so. But it is mentioned, tanha dutiyo puriso, diga maddhana sansara. In this all long sansara, craving is our companion. Itta bhava anyata bhavan sansarang nati vattati. So we are acting according to the craving. So craving asks to do this, so we are doing it. Craving asks to do something else, so we are doing that. So likewise, craving is the one always making requests. Craving is the one always giving us orders, and we are like slaves, simply following those orders. So therefore, craving is our companion in this whole samsara. Eva madinava nyatva tanham dukkhasa sambhavam. Vita tanho anadano sato bhikkhu paribhaji. So having understood this craving is causing a lot of suffering. Vita tanho anadano. The monk, the practitioner, actually now try to fade away craving, remove craving, uproot craving. Vita tanho. Now he is becoming free from craving. Anadano, he is not grasping either. So you know tanha paccha upadana. So when the tanha is active, it will lead to upadana. It will lead to craving, grasping, holding. So that is the improved level of craving. So you are more and more craving means that you go and grasp. So you are living in a different state. So here, therefore, it is mentioned. So the having understood that craving is causing a lot of trouble, a lot of suffering. So now the practitioner is leading a life which is enabling him to keep away craving, keep away any kind of grasping. Now his mind is free from grasping, free from craving. So gradually he is now uprooting craving. With the tanho anadano, sato, and he is mindfully doing it. So the mindfulness is the one actually looking after or sort of having a kind of a perspective about the mind. So he is sort of doing some sort of an introspection and how mind is behaving. So always, therefore, diligent about the practice, vigilant about how mind is behaving. So therefore, after understood that, so he is now trying to lead a life which is fading of craving rather than holding, rather than grasping. He is now trying to live a life free from grasping, anupadano or anadano, free from grasping. Sato bhikkhu paribhidhe. Now he is leading such a mindful life. So there are some more to explain. Actually, in this section, it is mentioned that this Paccheka Buddhas are actually maintaining a life of 8 types of living, 8 what you call as 8 different types of living is mentioned. One is Iriyapata Charya, where one is trying to be mindful on various postures. So among many postures now, so each and every posture he is living mindfully. Then Ayatana Charya, all the senses are guarded. So not allowing the senses to get fooled by various other, say, forms, sounds, smells, etc. So he's guarding the senses, Ayatana Charya. Then Saticharya, so establish mindfulness. 4 types of mindfulness is there, Saticharya. Then Samadhicharya, so he's having concentration practices, Jhana. So he's able to attain Jhana, Saticharya. Then Jnanacharya, so this is the availability of the Four Noble Truths. So he is in the level of the knowledge of the wisdom about the Four Noble Truths. Then Maggacharya, he is developing Noble Eightfold Path. Then Patticharya, he is able to attain the Arhantship, or here the Paccheka Buddhahood, and he is enjoying that attainment, Patticharya. And then actually he is doing the Lokattacharya, where he is now going on Pinnapatha and preaching and trying to help others. And all these things is called the Lokattacharya. So he is doing as much as possible for the benefit of the others. So this is he first actually take care of the well-being of himself. And then he is now looking after or helping the others to develop their spiritual aspects as well. So like that, it is mentioned in this verse. So this particular Paccheka Buddha actually has used metta, loving kindness, as a base to coming to the spiritual practice. And then keeping that as a base, as a foundation, he developed the Jhana. And after emerging from Jhana, he was able to reflect various mental states or various phenomena, and seeing their reality, their impermanence, suffering, non-self, those characteristics. Now he is able to practice Vipassana and ultimately attain the Paccheka Buddhahood. So this is what explained in this first verse in the Kaggavisana Sutta. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Chattu is not available today, so I will be reading the questions. So currently, we have 3 questions. The first question, it is mindful walking and sitting both. I will read them both. Mindful walking, practiced on a sand floor. Sensations of the different parts of the foot and the transferring of body weight from right leg to the left leg were noticed. Various thoughts, future and past, were arisen then and there. However, noticed all those as a third person. Mindful sitting. Started with the sensation on the posture and recognized in and out breath for a few minutes. Subsequently, the breath could not be noticed. Various feelings in the inner part of the body, including heartbeat, could be recognized. Kindly sought further advice for developing the practice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think you are doing well. So basically, this is how we have to improve our mindfulness as much as possible. So as we discuss even today, so we are spreading the mindfulness, enhancing the mindfulness. So suppose you are now doing sitting practice, maybe even walking practice. So without restricting your practice to those two sessions, now you are trying to spread your mindfulness to even various daily activities. So likewise, we have to have some sort of a inner drive to enhance mindfulness. So that wish, that urge has to come from ourselves. So at the beginning of the practice, therefore, we should have that kind of a drive, kind of a motivation to enhance the mindfulness, develop the mindfulness in as much as possible. So without it, there is no progress. So you are, this report represents that kind of eagerness is there, and you are trying to enhance your mindfulness. So please continue. Yeah.
Question number two. This is on walking practice. Dear Bhante, when I do walking practice, I start feeling very sleepy after 10 to 15 minutes. Apart from that, there is no problem of being mindful on my walking. The sleepiness develops after observing the differences of the left and right foot continuously and being aware of the walking process continuously for more than 5 to 6 minutes. Before that, I observe the details, and the sharpness of these details becomes less and less gradually. Therefore, I think it is the same area that Bhante explains about fading away of the sensations. When I notice the sleepiness creeping in, I try to be more and more mindful and try to grasp more information of this process. I can feel that I am trying to use mindfulness as a tool or weapon to fight against the sleepiness, which I do not like. In the back of my mind, I have this belief that I should overcome sleepiness for successful practice. Most of the time, I can come out of it after a lot of attempt. It feels like I have put mindfulness between myself and the sleepiness and used mindfulness to absorb the sleepiness. Is this okay as a technique? Seek your advice and guidance. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there are various to overcome sleepiness is quite recommended. So there are other say practical techniques as well. Say when you are just before going to the walking path, so you can have a cup of tea or coffee and some simply energize yourself and then go. On the other hand, the walking path, if it is in the outside in the garden with some shiny other some say well illuminated area, so that is much better. Rather than being in a gloomy area. So if you are able to have a kind of an open space for your walking, that is also much better. So that also prevent you become drowsy. And on the other hand, if you feel, say, drowsy, you can walk a little fast. So in a way, that is we are somewhat manipulating our walking. But that is not the proper way of doing. But here, in order to overcome sleepiness, you can do some purposeful walking fast. And later, once the, say, sleepiness has gone, overcome, again, you can come back to the natural way of walking. So likewise, you can use many techniques and try to use all this, doesn't matter. So it's a matter of further improving yourself, because especially if you are leading a very busy life, So while walking, while sitting, you definitely may feel sleepy, because what we have to engage with is a very boring activity. So our mind doesn't like it. So when the sensual desires are sort of overpowering ourselves, so it is always asking some new experience, always asking some pleasurable experience. So therefore, this kind of a very, say, boring exercise, monotony, is never appreciated by the mind. So therefore, it is always asking this and that. Ultimately, it go to sleep. Ultimately, because this exercise, what we have given, is does not bring any kind of say, excitement, any kind of enjoyment at the beginning. So therefore, mind feel sort of drowsy and ultimately fall asleep. So this is a common problem that most of the practitioners are having when they are coming from their busy lives to this mindfulness practice. But as we develop, this can be overcome. So actually, I can remember how I was started my practice, because I ordained at the age of 36 after leading a very busy life. So when I started my practice, it was like a nightmare. I mean, I couldn't practice at all because mind feels sleepy. So after a while, mind feels sleepy. So it's a matter of energizing ourselves using various techniques without giving up, again and again, applying energy and practicing. But slowly the mind becomes refined, mind becomes sensitive. So on such occasion, slowly the awakefulness is going to be available. You know, the mindfulness, awakefulness are very similar terms. So as we develop awakefulness, as we are further refining our attention, so then it is our mind able to be awakened or maintain mindfulness even with some boring activity. Even with a very neutral activity, he is able to maintain mindfulness. So, you know, typically what happens is we are being awake by various exciting activities. So that is how we think that we are enjoying our life. Say you are watching a movie. So that movie may have a lot of excitement, maybe some adventurous things, or maybe very attractive scenes. So that is how it is capturing our attention. But on the other hand, if a particular movie is simply having a very soft, simple, and kind of a same thing, like say someone is simply meditating, no sounds, just that. So that you feel sleepy even while watching that movie. So we are being awake by agitating our mind. So that is how we typically live. But when it comes to mindfulness practice, so those activities are very ordinary activities. So while we engage in those ordinary activities, we easily fall asleep. But later, as we develop our mindfulness, as we develop or refine our mindfulness, our mind sensitivity is further improved, and therefore it is even able to maintain such mindfulness, such awakened mind, with those ordinary activities. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. This is a general question. Yes, Swami Nuhansa. This is related to the last Dhamma talk and Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. The non-self, non-co, or nothing to hold on concept highlighted in this sutta was very well explained by you in detail, and how this false notion is created due to the delusions and fixed view and self, when reality is a flux, like a ever-changing nature. It is fascinating how rebirth, karma, and karmic dependencies are woven into above key concepts in an intricate manner. Appreciate if Swami Nuhansa can explain a bit how continuous rebirth and samsara sits on top of this non-self and co-less delusion with metta. That's the end of the question.
Actually, when we are dealing with, say, with ignorance, so avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana. So basically, when the ignorance is present in our mind, so we consider that I am a person, I am so and so, I have these designations. So this is my body, this is belongs to me, and I am the owner. So likewise, so we are promoting a self-view. So with that ignorance, we do various activities, and as a result, we accumulate karma, and that karma actually creates the field. So Buddha mentioned, kammam kettam, vinyanam bijam, tanha sineho. So those are the three parameters, three requisites that Buddha mentioned for the rebirth to happen. So we all have that karma, which appear like as a field, as a ketta, as a, you know, when we are plowing field. So we are having the seeds and then we are plowing on the field. So this field is the karma. So we have that some accumulated karma to give fruits. And again, tanha, the craving, does not allow us to finish. So we always want to have more and more. So that craving is giving us the necessary moisture, necessary water to continue. And the vijnana is the root. Vijnana is the seed. So basically, with the promotion of various sankhara, various activities, so vijnana is now well established, and therefore a rebirth going to happen. So ignorance is there, promoting a self, promoting a person, and with that we do various activities giving us enough field of karma, and there the consciousness go and well establish. So therefore the rebirth happens. So therefore it is also mentioned in the what you call the idappacceta, or this dependent arising, patisamuppada. So avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam. So this actually can be explained in terms of the kind of incident happening in this life, or whatever the scenario happens in this life, or even it can expand to the rebirth as well. So as I explained, so even the rebirth happens in a similar manner. So we, rather than maintaining kind of a non-grasping mind, so we fueled by craving, fueled by ignorance, so one may go and grasp. So when the consciousness, vijnana, is established there, so the craving further give the necessary moisture, and the karma is giving us enough field, that necessary fertilizer, so the next life is also going. So likewise, Buddha explains very beautifully how this ignorance actually causing this ongoing cycle.
Question number 4 of 6 is again related to the Dhamma sermon. Dear Bhante, today's Dhamma sermon's initial part is very much applicable and a perfect reflection of myself, and presume for many of us as well. Similar to the four types of monk scenarios, my day is more or less kind of a mindfulness here and there. When I practice, I feel composed and quite mindful on my objects of mindfulness, and afterwards, within several day-to-day activities, it drops off like a water flowing through my fingers when I try to carry some water. Any advice is much appreciated on how we can sustain this quality we develop in the practice. That's the end of the question.
One support is that always reminding yourself to be mindful. So I can remember actually when I am developing, so as much as possible I have to remind myself, because mind forgets. Mind easily forgets and again go and grasp something, and I am living in a fantasy, maybe planning, daydreaming. So this is happening as a natural habit of the mind. So in order to come out of it, so we have to always remind the mind, just be mindful, establish mindfulness. Likewise, we have to remind the mind. So one option I used is I pasted certain stickers or little labels here and there where I used to forget. Say when I'm entering my kuti, so on the door, I have a little label, be mindful. And when I'm going to my table, so on the table, there's a little label, be mindful. Say when I'm watching the clock, that's a little label pasted, be mindful. So if I am going to go to the washroom, on that door, there's a label, be mindful. So likewise, as much as possible, so I have to remind myself to be mindful. Otherwise, mind forgets and habitually go and live in a dream, in a fantasy, in a plan. So this is a typical nature of our mind. So I feel this is also helpful to you. And again, you have to recognize where I am not mindful. So you have mentioned here and there you are mindful. So that is your nature. So you have to recognize where I am not mindful or where I am unmindful. So you need to find out how to establish mindfulness on those activities as well. So actually our whole life is this kind of an experiment, this kind of an improvement. So we are always looking after ourselves and looking, having kind of an introspection to look after the mind and see, am I doing it properly? Am I being mindful? Am I able to establish mindfulness on when I am dealing with this kind of an activity? So if I am not, so then I have to find ways and means to do that mindfully. So likewise, we become our own teacher to our own pathfinder, our own guidance. So therefore, you are the ones can do it best. So find out various those mechanisms, various techniques to improve mindfulness, to establish mindfulness, and to fill those gaps where you are unmindful. Back to you, Chamila.
Question number 5 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Venerable Bante, would you please be able to elaborate on the term Pemini Dukkata Sadara Vima? Please. Thank you for your advice. Much merits with metta.
Yeah. And Lokasayanasi used to say not only that, Pemini Dukk Pani Rasai. So Pemini Dukkata Sadara Vima. So we are able to accept the suffering. And Pemini Dukk Pani Rasai. So we are being with it without hating it. So, you know, if you consider it little deeply, so you know the first noble truth, Dukkha Satcha. So in the Dukkha Satcha, what Buddha mentioned is that Dukkha Satcham Parinyayam. Idam Dukkha Satcham Parinyatam. The first is you need to recognize the suffering. So typical approach is, I want to get rid of suffering. So that is how we actually personify our experience. That is where we go wrong. Whenever something, say, bad happens, so whenever something that we don't like happens, so are we able to step back and watch it? So that is where we try to understand suffering. So this understanding of suffering requires kind of a radical approach. So typically, habitually what we do is to reject suffering, always trying to get rid of it, always trying to find fault with someone else, always thinking that why it is happening to me, I am always suffering, always bad things happen to me, I am quite unfortunate. So likewise, we are always putting unnecessarily a person into it. So it becomes kind of a self-created suffering. Now, instead of doing that, so here we are trying to understand how this suffering happens. So in order to do that, so we have to accept suffering. We have to radically accept suffering. So suffering is there. I'm having some sort of an agitation. I'm having maybe resentment. I'm having kind of a worry. So let me recognize it. Let me acknowledge it. So there's a worry. So you are recognizing this worry. So you understand various ways how this worry is there. So in return, what happens is you may be able to recognize its cause. So how this worry has arisen? How this resentment has arisen? What is the cause? So there probably you may understand, okay, I want certain things to happen in a particular manner, but right now it has happened in a different manner. So my expectation is different from how it has happened. So there's a kind of a contradiction. So therefore, I am suffering. So how about accepting now it has happened. Okay, it has happened like this. Right now, I can't do anything. So, I simply have to accept it. Suppose a person is behaving in a particular manner. So, I am suffering because I have a particular defined or predefined way that this person should behave like this. So, when he is not behaving like this, I am going to suffer. How about accepting that he is ignorant and he is not with full wisdom, is unable to perform as I wish, he don't know even what I am expecting. So likewise, I can look at the situation in a different manner and really recognize what is the cause of suffering. So this only can happen when I am able to understand suffering well. So that is why our Loku Sainanse used to say, so you have to, in a way, taste it well. You have to properly investigate well. Then only you can recognize the cause of suffering as well. Okay.
Question number 6. This is the last question. It's a general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, we have heard Gautama Buddha has highlighted mindfulness as the most important skill one should develop in the spiritual path. Is this the same with other Buddhas' essence of practice? Maybe Gautama Buddha might have mentioned something else as the basis of other Buddhas. Just checking if that's the case with metta. It's the other question.
Actually, even the Gautama Buddha, in Satipatthana Sutta, it is mentioned, Ekaino ayam bhikkhave maggo. So this represents that this is a direct path to the purification of the beings. But there are various other paths also available. Now, say for example, if one attains jhana, so it is at first giving prominence to the concentration, and then having jhana as a highly concentrated mind, and then he emerge from jhana and then reflect various phenomena available and seeing the characteristics, universal characteristics, anicca, dukkha, anatta, and practicing vipassana on top of that, and then trying to attain. So this is someone can say, this is samatha pubbangama vipassana. So immediately emphasizing mindfulness is very much not there. What is emphasized is the concentration. So this is another approach. And there are certain other mechanisms like yuganadda, where you are keeping development of mindfulness or vipassana as well as the samatha hand in hand. So going two things parallel. So those approaches are also there. And therefore we can't say that even the Gautama Buddha mentioned only mindfulness, but he has taught various other techniques as well. But the mindfulness has given quite prominence in his teaching. So, but it doesn't mean that that is the only technique he has mentioned. And maybe, the other Buddhas also may have done the same manner.
Yes, Bhante, we just got one more question. It's a general question. Bhante, if we don't have recognizable suffering to learn or accept, is it logical to change the status quo and simulate some suffering? And how observe how we are reacting?
Not necessary. So not necessary, because suppose you are not recognizing any suffering, and if that indicates that, you need to have very refined mindfulness in order to do that. Say if there is no suffering, that means there is no grasping. If there is any kind of grasping, that ultimate or inevitable result is suffering. So in another way, so if we are telling that you don't have suffering, then definitely there can't be any grasping. If there can't be any grasping, then your mind has to be free. So you can't have ignorance in other sense. It's a kind of a causal reaction, we can say. So suffering is the end product. So if you can't find suffering, then you can't find the grasping as well. You can't find any craving. You can't find any kind of say, established consciousness. So you can't find any ignorance. So basically, this various factors of Patisthavupada are fairly faded. That is how the mind becomes free. So therefore, you have to check, is it really there is no grasping? Is it really that mind is completely free? Am I really having very pleasant, non-grasping, quite spacious, and still kind of a mind? If you have that, well and good. You need to promote it. You don't need to purposely make it suffer. So if you are able to maintain such kind of a mind, free mind, non-grasping mind, no craving, no tension. So that is a kind of a very good mind state that you need to maintain, that kind of a mind state that you need to promote. So you don't need to pollute it, or you don't need to destroy it purposely. That is not the approach. Yeah. My answer has another question to that same person. So if he or she is there in the audience, you can raise your hand. So otherwise, we can wind up the session.
So they want to ask more? I think we've just come to the end of the program. So we will conclude for today. I'd just like to say thank you to Bhante for taking his time to come to this session and giving us his valuable comments and the Dhamma talk as well, and for everyone who's been supporting this program, and also the participants for joining in and making this session a valuable session for all of us. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Sadhu, sadhu.